from the Gettysburgian and 91.1 WZBT Gettysburg. I'm Jamie Welch, and this is On Target.
I'm Ben Ponce. Today on Target, we'll talk to Vice President of College Life and Dean of Students, Julie Ramsey, Vice President of Finance and Administration, Dan Constellant, and Student Senate President, Luke Fregon, about the Hanson Hall mold situation amid a fiery Student Senate meeting last Monday.
And this isn't just Hanson. I had mold. They had to completely take out my shower and smizer and stuff like that. I mean, you know, all right, stop listening, kids. This is f***ing bull.
Then we'll wrap up with the bullet report.
Stay with us.
Our main story this week on Target is the mold problem in Hanson Hall. And for those of you who may not follow this story quite as closely as we have, here's a summary of the history of this story. The college says that it discovered mold in the pipe insulation of Hanson Hall while conducting an inspection in January in response to a report of mold in the building. This led to the relocation of the residents of the basement, where the mold was originally discovered and where college officials say they originally believed the issue was limited to. On January 24th, an email was sent to residents of the basement that promised them priority housing in the housing process. Meanwhile, the college retained an environmental consultant to inspect the building and make recommendations on how to proceed. Based on the recommendations of the consultant, the college decided to remediate the entire building immediately instead of waiting until summer, and contracted a cleaner to conduct this remediation. Each floor takes about 2 weeks, during which residents do not have access to their original rooms but can leave many of their belongings behind. Students are on a rotation, living in the basement while each of their floors is renovated. Because all residents of the building were now affected, the college mulled the best solution to compensate everyone. Kent announced on February 19th that there would instead be a $250 credit on students' housing bill, which Kent says is meant to help defray cleaning costs for items affected by the mold. Some Hanson basement residents were angry that the college had gone back on its promise to offer them priority housing and asked Student Senate to get involved. Monday marked a fiery and contentious Senate meeting where Kira Kant was criticized for taking away priority housing, for a lack of communication throughout the process, and for declining to commit to inspecting all residential buildings on a regular basis for mold. Kant also declined to apologize to the residents of Hanson Hall at the meeting on Monday, a move that drew sharp criticism from senators and from Senate President Luke Fregon. Vice President of College Life and Dean of Students Julie Ramsey issued an apology to Hanson residents on Tuesday, and on Thursday, the housing priority for the residents of Hanson basement was reinstated. A protest today on the steps of Pennsylvania Hall fizzled out amid gusty winds, but not before President Riggs and Dean Ramsey spoke to students and thanked them for protesting and bringing their concerns to the college's attention. And joining us now to talk about the mold and the college's response are Dan Constellant, Vice President of Finance Administration at Gettysburg, and Vice President of College Life and Dean of Students, Julie Ramsey. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks Jamie.
So, Dean Ramsey, I want to start with a question for you. So, what led you to make the decision to offer the priority housing back to the students, to give it back to the Hanson basement residents?
Well, first of all, let me say I'm really excited to be here, and thank you for giving us this opportunity to talk with you and clarify as much about these issues as we possibly can. So, the housing priority was... The way the idea was originally framed was that this is sort of an unprecedented thing. And we talked about the housing priority at the time when we thought that only the basement residents were affected. And the unprecedented part is that, at least in my memory, I don't think we've ever had to move an entire floor, or let's say relocate an entire floor of students in the middle of a semester. And mm-hmm. I've been here a long time. We've never done that before. And the fact that it's first year students who are, you know, still kind of new and vulnerable and forming their community and forming their friends made it even more, unfortunate, I'll put it that way. So the idea was that you can't not relocate them. You can't. Mm-hmm. You can't not do it. But is there something we could do that would allow them the possibility of reconstituting their community, perhaps next year when they're all choosing housing and they can kind of get back together if that's what they chose to do. And that was the thought behind it. Then, shortly after, we learned that everyone would suffer in the building a certain amount of dislocation, not to the same extent, really, but some amount of dislocation. Mm-hmm. And then we, of course, got some, well, does that apply to everyone now, or does it apply to anyone? And I wasn't in Hanson, but I worked really hard, and so I should also get priority, or why are you giving it to them? So we sort of struggled to figure out what was fair. Mm-hmm. You know, what does fair look like when you have these people who are being affected at various levels? So we thought, I guess the thought was, well, we won't give it to anybody now. And then we got, of course, more feedback on that from students that, and I think the thing that was really compelling to me was the argument that students were making that the college had promised them something. Right or wrong, agree or disagree, the college had promised them something, and we were reneging on our promise. Mm-hmm. And that was the part that I thought, we just can't do that. I don't want to do that. That's not what I want the college to be known for with students. And I don't, so at that point, we sort of went back to our original goal, which was, this is for basement residents only. They're the ones that have been uniquely and most dramatically impacted by this dislocation.
So who was involved in making this final decision to give back that housing priority?
I think, so that decision was made this week, and the folks who were involved in that decision included myself, Kara Kant, Jeff Foster, President Riggs. I think those were the main folks involved.
And are these the same people that were involved in the $250 credit decision than in the original decision to offer priority housing, or is it a different group?
I think the $250 housing credit was, we've had a group working on this from the beginning, ever since we knew that we were going to have to relocate the basement residents. Mm-hmm. There's been a kind of working group which included facilities folks, college life, residence life, DPS, because they have the life safety piece there. It's included the outside consultants that we've worked with. And I think that's been the main group that has worked on the details of this. So I don't think the $250, Dan and I had discussed it. The original impetus for the $250 credit was the idea that, again, with regard to the basement, people were being asked to relocate, and that we were under the impression, because students told us this, as did parents, that some of them had decided to replace their bedding or items that were out, sort of exposed, what they thought was exposed to the mold. Mm-hmm. And so, or they might need to do, they wanted to do more laundry, they wanted to kind of run everything through the laundry, which is understandable. Mm-hmm. And this credit, this money, was intended to offset those perhaps added expenses. Now, some people replaced bedding, some people didn't. Some people ran their stuff through the laundry, some people didn't. If they didn't do any of those things, then it was just an extra $250. And so then when the whole building became involved again, that's when we decided to extend the credit to the entire building.
Gotcha. So will, sort of logistically, the lottery priority that has been offered, will that put them directly at the front of the line, like to be numbers 1 through 24? Or will they just be put into the top bracket and then randomized, or has that been decided yet?
Yeah, Jamie, that's a great question. I don't know the answer. That's a more of a Res Life kind of question of details, logistics that I tend not to get involved in. I leave that to the wiser minds of that know how all that works.
All right, let's switch gears a little bit, and this is a question, Dan, for you. So in reference to that $250 housing credit, we've heard kind of a lot of chatter around the campus community about that number specifically. Can you comment on how the figure of $250 was chosen as opposed to $200, $300, or anything else?
Again, like Julie, I appreciate the chance to be here today. You know, we had talked about it, the group that had been working on this all along and kind of had put pushed this back and forth. I think we had heard from some folks that they had incurred out-of-pocket costs in the $100 range or low $100 range. Yeah. So, you know, we said, well, we need to, you know, let's be higher than that, and let's try to be safely higher than that. And we just tried to imagine what, you know, what an out-of-pocket would be in terms of having to replace, you know, comforters or sheets or those kind of things. So I will tell you, though, that I think we made this decision fairly quickly because I think our first concern was timeliness and being able to provide something. So I think that was, you know, we tried to hit something that we thought was reasonable, but we also wanted to get it out there as quickly as possible.
Yeah, and it clearly was tied to this idea of replacing, or as I said, laundering a few key items of in a student's possession related to the mold.
And so we were just, before we started recording, joking about sustainable excellence, but that is sort of the college's program of late to rein in some expenditures. And by our calculation, you know, this $250 housing credit multiplied across all the residents of Hanson will be about a $40,000 line item. And I'm, you know, we're just curious, where's sort of this money coming from, and is it going to affect anything else that's going on institution-wide or ResLife-wide?
Yeah. The funding for this is not going to impact anything that impacts the student experience. It doesn't go back against funds that we make available to Student Senate or organizations. It's not going to come out of our financial aid budget. It's not going to come out of anything that impacts the student experience. We have identified a funding source for it, but it's not going to be at the expense of our students. This was intended to help students, to reimburse them for those out-of-pocket costs that they incurred in the process.
So this next question is also for Dan. The Gettysburgian has obtained documents and photos detailing mold concerns in Hanson dating back to 2015. Can you talk about the history of mold issues and maintenance investigations in Hanson Hall?
I think what I can comment on is this, in that and we talked about this a little bit in our group as well. We have a protocol to respond to incidents of people having concerns around mold or air quality. I think we can do some things to make that protocol a little bit more clear and a little bit more transparent. But our process has been to respond to those incidents as they take place or as they are reported to us.
So what about complaints in late 2017 that led to the air quality test and the retention of the environmental consultant? What was different about those that led you to do the more thorough inspection than maybe some of other complaints that you might have received?
Let me take that one, Jamie. I think I know the details on that. So yes, there was a complaint or a concern that was sent through the channels, I think, that Dan's referring to, sent to facilities. Some work was done on the room, the particular room, over the break. And then after the work was done, our facilities people, well, really our life safety guy, went through to test the room to make sure that it was up to par, and they found that it really wasn't. So they came back through. That's when we brought in the outside person, tester, who does the I don't know what all these technical terms are, but the guy who does the testing, and he said, no, you have an issue and you have some mold here. That's when we started looking not just on one room, but really through the whole basement. That's when we decided, okay, there's enough here that we want to, in the interests of student safety and student health, that we think the smartest thing to do, the best thing to do, is to relocate the students from the basement.
We have a report that a Residence Life student staff member reported mold in a room in the basement on move-in day back in August.
Right.
And we also have a report from a student who lived in Hanson from 2015 to 2016 that a student opened a ceiling tile to find insulation from a leaking pipe that spanned the length of the floor that was covered in mold. And this student also reported ongoing health issues, ostensibly in connection to this mold exposure. So did the college conduct any building-wide assessment prior to January 12, 2018? And if not, why did the college not do that?
I don't know of any building-wide. It's possible that it was, you know, I'm not, as I said, I mean, facilities, I don't know. The student that you're referring to, the one who on move-in day, that's the same student whose room the work was done in, I believe, over the break. And
okay.
The delay there had to do with us being able to get in while she was still in the room.
Gotcha. So moving forward, we understand that the college will conduct room-by-room inspections each summer to proactively identify any issues. Why was this not already a part of the college's procedures, and will this apply to all residential facilities across campus or only certain ones?
We have a process now, a pre-move-in process, where we prepare rooms for students upon their arrival when we come back, and we routinely review them to make sure that they're ready, okay? And you know, it's a visual inspection of the entire room. In response to this, what we want to do is strengthen that review by making sure that we are specifically, as part of that inspection process, looking for mold particularly, and that we brief the people that are doing it on what to be looking for. So it's a strengthening of an existing process, but it should touch every room before we turn them over to students in the fall.
And so switching gears a little bit to sort of a broader maintenance issue, this mold issue, I think, has sparked a number of complaints or has tapped into some past frustrations that students have had with the facilities process. And one of the concerns that we've heard a great deal about is with laundry. And there are reports that machines are inoperable. There have been some drainage issues, that people are having trouble getting in contact with the vendor. And we know all of our laundry machines are contracted with an outside vendor. Yeah. First, can you kind of talk about what that relationship looks like with our outside vendor with respect to laundry, and who's responsible when a concern arises?
Yeah. No, I'd be happy to. So first, let me say that we completely understand the frustrations around some of our laundry facilities right now. Frankly, we share them, okay? And we are in conversations with those contractors now to get them to improve their performance. So, but in terms of that relationship, like a lot of schools, especially of our size, we do look to an outside provider to provide those services and make them responsible for the upkeep of that equipment and responding to concerns that have been raised. We've used outside firms for a number of years, we think more or less to everyone's advantage, but certainly more recently, their performance is strained, and we're working with them to try to improve it. So in terms of background, that's where we've ended up. It's not an uncommon practice. It had worked well for us in the past. We're trying to get this firm to improve their performance today.
And so what options are on the table as far as improving those practices?
Well, a couple of things right now. So as we went through the fall, many of the issues we were having was in the equipment in Musselman and Apple, all right? And we struggled with them during the fall, and we finally insisted that the firm replace that equipment over the break, okay? And so those machines were switched out, and our understanding is that those machines are performing better now as a result. So even though it's the contractor's responsibility for the performance of those machines, because we can see that we're not getting where we want them to be, we've started to look at what do we think the causes are, and if we have to put the causes in front of them, even though it's their responsibility, we will. In doing that, one of the things that we're seeing is that the other machines right now that, again, appear to us to have the higher failure rate have almost a very similar install date as the ones that we pulled out of Musselman and Apple over the break. So now we're working with them to say, we want all those machines that are similarly situated, out as well. We're hoping that will improve the performance here.
And so is the expectation then that a lot of those machines that were installed around that same date will be replaced perhaps come next fall?
We're in conversations with them right now. I don't know what the timing will be. I don't want that timing to be disruptive to students that have already been inconvenienced by this. So some of it will be what makes best sense for us in terms of being able to do that.
Mm-hmm. And so we've also heard from students who are kind of venting frustration at some of our own facilities department for, you know, what they've described as inadequate or untimely or even in some cases non-existent responses to concerns. Some students have reported that they've had tickets closed without any action. Others have said that it's taken their parents getting on the phone to spark action. Can you kind of talk about, you know, in broad strokes, why should students feel confident using our facility's ticket system if in many cases they feel like they're not getting any responses at all or inadequate responses?
Let me start by saying that we take the responsiveness to maintenance requests, certainly from students and from our own staff as well, very seriously. All right. And we too are bothered by the fact that there appears to be this disconnect between our system and the people that it is intended to serve. I watched the tape of the student senate meeting from this week. Our facilities director has watched it. We're getting our managers to look at it, all right, because I want them all to hear these concerns firsthand. So in terms of where we go from here, I think we need to hear more from students around the experience that they're having and why is it that There appears to be a gap between the system that we think is directing our activities and one that we're saying is not serving us as well as it should. It's my hope that the group that we've asked to form with representatives of the Student Senate will be a major part of that. But we need to sit back and listen and kind of understand better exactly where those issues are arising. I can tell you that it is certainly not our intention to not be responsive. I hate to think that it's us ignoring the campus, but something is keeping us from hearing the campus, and that's really what I want to focus on right now is how we hear it, how we close that gap, how we improve it from here.
Mm-hmm. So the president has announced that she will appoint a group of facilities folks, the chief of facilities, Dan, myself, and three or four students, to really, as Dan said, listen to students and their concerns. And get to the bottom, try to really look at best practices and see what we should be doing to make sure that we have a top flight response and transparency around responses going forward.
Yeah, and so then just two quick follow-ups. One complaint that I've heard, and in fact, I just had to submit a facility ticket myself recently, and one thing is that the system, the computer system is, for lack of a better term, a little antiquated. Is there any
good
talk?
Good to know. That's a perfect example.
Is there any talk or is it on the table to look at improving that technology?
Right now, Ben, everything is on the table as far as I'm concerned. So we need to know that that's an issue and hear from students about other issues as well.
And so if students are having issues in the shorter term before some of these larger recommendations are made, if students are having issues, getting a response from facilities, what options do they have if, their ticket is closed and short of just submitting another ticket and going back into the queue? Are there any other recourse or options students have?
I think starting by phoning the student response desk, okay, our service center, those are the folks that are responsible for making the assignments, all right, and they're the ones that set the priority. So most certainly, if we've closed something and we're hearing back that the response wasn't adequate or doesn't look like it was done, I want them to know about it so that they can get some priority on that. And if we have to, we'll try to involve the supervisory level to kind of see what the particular issue is.
And so going back to Monday's Senate meeting, President Luke Frigon raised the possibility of a class action lawsuit by students affected by the maintenance issues on campus. Has the college consulted legal counsel as it responded to these issues?
Well, as I think when students raise the idea of a lawsuit, what they're really trying to tell you is that they're frustrated with the answers they've been getting, and which is exactly why we've tried to respond as we have since Monday's meeting. The college regularly communicates with our attorneys about any matter that's a serious matter with the college. I've not spoken to any attorneys, nor did I feel the need to.
So a follow-up to that is, why didn't Kira apologize on Monday? Was it concerns about possible liability for the college that precipitated that, or was it something else that led Kira to not make that apology on Monday to the Student Senate and to the Hanson residents?
Kira was asked to come by Student Senate to respond to a series of questions, and I think I want people to understand that she and the Residence Life staff have worked so hard to make this whole process as, I know it's not fun for anyone, but they've really worked so hard to try to make it as tolerable as they possibly can. I think she was just a little taken aback, because from her perspective, she's really thought about nothing else since the beginning of the year. She's been focused on this literally for 2 months, every single day. My guess is she was just really taken aback and didn't quite know how to respond. But again, I think the important thing to say is that once I heard from the tape that an apology was in order, I made it a priority to, I consulted with the president, and I think I should do this, and I want to do this. And so we got something out, I think through you guys, or at least you were very helpful in getting it out quickly. And I meant that apology very genuinely, on behalf not just of myself and Residence Life, but really the entire college.
Most certainly.
And just turning to the protest that happened today real quickly, and President Riggs, you mentioned that you both went out there and spoke with the protesters. Do you support the protests that went on outside? Do you have any plans to meet with them and incorporate their concerns into the process moving forward?
How do I feel about the protest? I always enjoy when students protest. It's sort of maybe not always, but much of the time I do, because I think it shows engagement on the part of the students, and that's what I like. I like it when the students are really engaged. They gave us some good feedback. I think they have some of the same concerns we had heard at Student Senate. So I'm more than happy to meet with them. I offered that if they, happy to take it up from there. They are putting together a kind of, I guess, a list, and I think you guys are collecting responses from students as well. My guess is that those responses will start to fall into buckets or themes some of which we've already identified. I thought it was, I admire them for being out there, especially on such a windy day.
Indeed, and that very wind, we suspect, just caused a brief power outage in the middle of this interview, so hopefully we didn't lose the first half of it.
Hope not.
But in any case, final question, and this really is for both of you. Looking back and kind of looking for ahead, the college has some older residential facilities. It's not likely that this will be the last maintenance issue, perhaps even of this magnitude, ever to occur. What would the college have done differently if you were starting over? And what will the college do differently in a future situation of this nature, specifically with respect to the Hanson situation?
I'm sure there are some lessons learned, Ben, that we need to think about. I think we've been so focused on just sort of managing the day-to-day, I'm not sure we've extracted all the learning lessons. I think the main one I would take away is, again, it's so fundamental, is the importance of communication with students and engaging students. We probably would have been much better off if we had been much more communicative directly with Hanson residents, if we had gathered a group of Hanson residents to consult with at every stage of the process. I hope that students realize that the college has good intentions, but sometimes, we're moving at a pretty pretty fast clip to try to get all this stuff done, and I don't think we prioritize good communication, perhaps, as much as we should. So I'm sure there are other lessons, but that's one of the main ones I have to be reminded of on a regular basis.
Yeah. I don't think those intentions, though, we would do differently.
No,
I think for as much as maybe we've done some things differently, I think the one thing we wouldn't change is that, you know, we had students' best interests and their well-being in mind. That part we would stand by that, you know, on a review most certainly. And I think on the communication line, you know, certainly in terms of this particular matter, maybe. But I think from my perspective, it definitely is giving me a firm sense that we need to open up some other channels with students so that we start to hear when things are not meeting their expectations or reasonable standard. And we're going to need multiple channels. I think we're always going to need to manage by some kind of system that we can capture information and act on it. But I think we're going to need some other channels open as well as kind of a check on that process. And I think that's definitely something else that, you know, we're going to look to do differently and do better going forward.
Well, Dan Consula, Julie Ramsey, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And we're joined now by the president of Student Senate, Luke Fregan. Luke, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, happy to be here, guys. Thanks for having me.
So earlier today, just for context, it's 10:20 on a Friday evening, so I imagine a great deal of this campus is otherwise engaged right now. But we're joined by Luke, and earlier this afternoon, we interviewed Dan Consula, the Vice President of Finance and Administration, and Julie Ramsey, the Vice President of College Life and Dean of Students. Now, Luke, I understand yesterday you met with Dean Ramsey as well as President Janet Morgan Riggs. Can you talk a little bit about what that conversation included?
Yeah, so I did meet with the both of them in President Riggs' office, and they were definitely concerned, and I think they were definitely hearing the students' concerns, but as I relate to them, the problem was that they hadn't heard the concerns sooner. So they were kind of apologetic of that, but we all sat down, and President Riggs was kind of in charge of the conversation, you could tell, and Dean Ramsey, and they both seemed a little bit angry because, you know, obviously the protest that happened today that I'm sure we'll talk about and some of the things that the students have been saying about the college aren't great. They don't reflect well on the college. But I think they reflect some serious flaws that we have. And that's what we talked about. They were very interested to hear what the students really want to be done. And one of those things was for the residents of Hanson Basement, the original residents who were promised priority housing, to get that housing. And as you guys know, that happened earlier today?
Yesterday, I think it was.
Last night.
Yes.
So that was kind of a big focus. And then we decided that we would, as you guys saw, start a kind of committee or a team to address the problems that we're seeing. And that team will be made up of a few students, a few facilities team members, and a few administrators as well.
And so what are your goals for that working group, committee, team, whatever we're calling it?
Yeah, it's
ad hoc association.
There's so many
people.
Committees. I don't want to call it another committee.
I don't want to use the C word, but...
Oh, geez. Well, my goals for it are first of all, to really address what the issues are, because I think we're hearing a lot of things from students, be it facilities problems that are only in Hanson or water damage or mold, but there's also things in other buildings, so in Apple and Patrick, and as you guys have been seeing on your poll, I'm sure lots of other places. And so we want to address exactly what those are. So is it a specific genre of things? Is it mold? Again, we got to make sure it's not mold. And then if it's different things, kind of addressing them on a case-by-case basis. But we also talked about changing the way that you submit facilities requests. So the university, Yale University, has a facilities request system where they kind of delineate it into what type of request it is. So if your door is broken, it's like a structural maintenance issue. Or if you've got mold, it's like a hygiene and health issue. And I think the reason that a lot of our facilities requests aren't being answered is because there's such a volume of them all going into one big pot, and facilities is having to pick out of that. And instead of kind of being shunted more effectively into certain genres or certain departments, which could be a lot quicker, And we talked a little bit about that, and that's kind of what we plan on doing with the team as well.
And another topic that came up during our conversation with Dan and Julie was the laundry situation, which obviously was another big part of the Senate meeting on Monday. And I'm just wondering if laundry came up in your meeting.
It did. It was very clear to me that the two of them, and perhaps the administration, is also unhappy with our laundry. They're not happy with the third-party provider. At least that's what they told me.
We definitely got that sense today as well.
Okay, so. Good, good. Well, then, hey, there we go. There's a problem that we can address. But yeah, they seemed very, very sympathetic to that issue. I paid $8 for a load of laundry the other day, and that seemed to wow them. But yeah, we talked about that.
And so did they talk about any solutions while you were there, or was it just sort of like, yeah, we have a problem?
It was more or less, hey, we have a problem, and less so like, here's a solution for it. But they said we'd be open to looking into other options. I made a joke at the Senate meeting on Monday, like, oh, the Senate can buy laundry machines for everybody. But, you know, we will figure out a solution. And I think that was the kind of attitude that I got from them.
And so kind of shifting gears back to Monday's Senate meeting, particularly the board of directors meeting that occurred after when, I don't want to say things went off the rails, but certainly I think it was a more open and free-flowing conversation.
I would agree.
It was very frank.
It was very frank.
And so during that conversation in particular, there was kind of some discussion about next steps, not so much working towards the specific resolution of problems so much as putting public pressure on the college and kind of raising awareness, whether it be through something like posting, you know, we have mold posters in first year residence halls that people on tours might see, or items of that nature. Can you talk about whether you think those types of measures are appropriate and whether you anticipate that Senate or other students who may be affiliated with Senate, perhaps not on behalf of Senate, will pursue any of those options?
Well, I can tell you right now, Senate is fully opposed to that, at least the executive board. We obviously haven't voted on it, and I don't want to speak for every single student. And I think I didn't really make that clear as I should have on the at the BOD meeting on Monday. And I think, as you guys saw, you were there the whole time. Tensions were high, passions were high, everyone was kind of ramped up. But I don't think that anyone will be pursuing any legal action with the college, because that question came up as well. Obviously, I can't speak for every student, though. As you guys saw today, Democracy Matters, I believe, had the event outside of Pennsylvania Hall. And so I think students are going to speak out about it. I don't think they're necessarily going to use Senate as an avenue for that. And we're, you know, I think that's an important thing. I think it's important to let clubs do their own things and not have to, you know, make something pass through Senate, make an event be approved by Senate.
And so just specifically, you alluded to it right there, but on Monday you had floated particularly the possibility of a class action lawsuit. Is it fair to say that's not something you're pursuing at this point?
That is fair to say, yes.
So, and is that because of the meeting that you had? Do you feel that they're adequately listening to and responding to the concerns that students had at Senate?
I think they are. I really think they are. And I definitely got that sense of concern, like I said, from the both of them. And I think that kind of made me think, okay, well, there are steps being taken, or there are steps being taken towards steps. And I just think we haven't seen that in the past. And I think the actual expression of that is nice.
So is there anything that you think the college should do beyond what's already been announced? Are there any steps that you think they should take beyond what's already been announced that you'd like to share today?
I don't know. I like, people are saying, oh, everyone in Hanson should get priority housing. But as we talked about at the meeting on Monday, if everyone has priority housing, no one has priority housing. So I don't really think that that's a good
I heard one stand, proposal that suggested take. All 700 members of the first year class ought to get priority housing.
Well,
I endorse that proposal.
I can't personally speak to that, but I understand your concerns.
Yeah. We can just give every student on campus priority housing and it'll all be good. Everybody be happy then, right?
I was talking with a student today and they said, you know, if they're going to force us to live in residential halls all 4 years like they do, they might as well be nice ones. So maybe we can up everyone to priority housing. Who knows?
Yeah. I'm not So that's quite how priority works.
Yes.
It's not like they're going to build you a new house. It's just, to choose among the existing accommodations that are available.
If everybody gets a, you know, bump, then we're all where we started.
That is true.
Yeah, that's...
That was, in fact, the joke of everyone getting priority housing.
That's correct.
Just for anyone following along who may not have gotten it.
Good for everybody.
And then one other sort of item related to last Monday's Senate meeting. There were a couple students who spoke up about health concerns specifically that they have had, and that seemed to be one point that has not necessarily been addressed in sort of the recent communications from Dean Ramsey and from President Riggs. Can you speak to whether that's something Senate's going to continue to look into?
Well, let me start off by saying Dean Ramsey told me in our meeting that they did air quality tests on every single floor, and there was nothing that was out of the ordinary. So in the regard of breathing in something or as far as something being in the air, she said there was no possible way that students could have gotten sick. However, that being said, I do think, and as I told the two of them in our meeting, I think Hanson basement is a musty, moldy, as we know now, but kind of like a dank place in the cellar sense of the word.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's kind of always been this like, oh yeah, Hanson's a dump. Like everyone always says that. And it's not, but I think the fact that it's in the basement and people, it kind of has this reputation for being gross.
I mean, we have students, though. There was a report from somebody on the second floor of Hanson who claimed that even 2 years ago, they had experienced adverse health effects mm-hmm. that went away when they left Hanson, but were there when they were in Hanson. So, I mean, are you completely discounting, you know, based on these air quality tests, their, you know, account that they had health issues relating to mold? Do you believe, Dean Ramsey, that there's no way that anybody could have had any health issues? Or
I think that the health issues that were brought up at Monday's meeting, and I received a few personal emails of students who have had health issues, really did, they struck a chord with me, and we're going to be pursuing them individually. We're going to be looking at them on a case-by-case basis, hopefully working with Dean Ramsey and President Riggs to do that, because I do think the concerns are warranted. And as you heard, one of our students, Emily Kaiser, had a pretty impassioned plea at Monday's meeting. And so I think that's important to pursue that, but it's not going to be the focus of that team. It's going to be kind of one of the things that the team is doing, but it's not going to be the main focus right now.
And with respect to that team that you mentioned, is that something that you envision being a permanent group or just something that's been convened for this semester to make recommendations and go away? Would you see value in there being kind of an ongoing committee where if you're not getting a response from facilities, you can go to this committee and that committee students have a direct dialogue with facilities? Is that something that you would support moving forward?
I hadn't even thought of that. I think the committee or the team, or we don't even know what we're going to call it, has to be something that extends past this semester. It has to be something that follows mm-hmm. us into the next year, at least. And if at that point it's decided, okay, maybe this is something that Student Senate can take over, or maybe this is something that we need to keep doing on an active level, the decision can be made there. But I really do think that it is important to at least address it through the end of this semester with the team.
And so at Monday's Senate meeting, there was also discussion of possibly bringing a representative from Facility Services to come and speak in kind of a similar way to the way that Kira came and spoke. Are there still plans to bring somebody to Student Senate from Facilities to answer to the student body, or do you plan to handle it through this work group?
We would really like someone to come. Emails have been sent. You guys might know the head of Facilities had a recent health issue, and I think is back now, though. But we didn't want to push that, obviously. But we do have a speaker coming on Monday from the dining facilities, so we don't want to double book speakers. So he'll probably come either the week after spring break or the week after that. So we are trying to get people to come, but no one's answered any emails yet.
Did you view Monday's conversation with Kira Cant as a productive dialogue?
I think it started as a productive dialogue, but I think it ended up just being students venting their issues to someone who wasn't necessarily responsible for any of those issues. I worked with Kira for 2 years, and I have immense respect for her, and I'm so happy that she came on Monday. I think things got a little hurtful at points, and I should have been more aware of that in the moment. But I think that it was a good meeting. It was a good meeting for a while. Few remarks were made that I didn't like so much. And then as you saw at BOD, it was kind of just like a, ugh.
So if a future speaker such as, I think you were referring to Jim Bezek, or perhaps the head of facilities, who did, I believe, have a health mm-hmm. issue at mm-hmm. one point recently, an accident of some sort. If someone like Jim Bezek were to come, would you anticipate the format being similar to what happened on Monday? Are there changes you would make to have that be a more productive conversation?
You know, I think that we definitely learned things from the meeting on Monday, and things to do, things not to do. I think it would probably be a similar format, but if Senate says, hey, we want to have like a formal question and answer session where he sits up there and we submit questions either beforehand or we do it, because I think the conversation with Kira stopped being a question and answer, and it was kind of like, hey, we're going to tell you these things, and you guys saw we didn't get a whole lot of answers, but it was more or less some students yelling at Kira for something she wasn't responsible for. I would like it to be a little more formal than that, but I think the general theme will be kept too.
So as we look forward to the rest of the spring semester, you and I are both going to be graduating.
Man,
it's crazy, I know. do you have any specific goals of things you'd like Senate to accomplish as you look forward for the rest of the semester, things that you'd like to get done?
I would really like the laundry issue to be addressed. I think Senate can be a good way to do that, and I think that'd be a nice thing for me personally to quote, go out on. But I also think that we should kind of keep up with, obviously, with what we're doing with the mold right now. We should keep being activists for our students who are having concerns. Something that I would like to do is also find a way to either use or do something with the rollover budget, because we haven't been able to access that, because we are still using our new initiatives account, which is great. But it's a large sum of money that I think could be put to good use, and right now is just sitting in a bank account somewhere.
And so what uses, I know you've spoken about this before, but do you have any new ideas as to ways that you'd like to use that budget, or are you still sticking with that sort of, I remember there was water fountains was floated.
Yeah, water fountains. So we are still thinking of the water fountains.
Okay.
Because that would be kind of cool. We also threw around the idea of a scholarship for either incoming first years or a scholarship within Gettysburg to pay for books and things like that for people that we saw as student leaders. And it would work just like any other scholarship. We could do it through financial aid. We could set it up as an actual scholarship that students would be awarded and then decide who to give it to. And be that a repeating amount of, $500, $1,000, something like that. Every year, I think we could do some good. And that would kind of leave a good legacy of what the rollover is right now and what I think it can be. Because like I said, it's just a big clump of money sitting there that we can't use, and I think it could be put to good use in the long term.
One of the goals that you mentioned in the fall as you were taking over as Student Senate President was that you wanted to make Student Senate a more activist body, I think was the term that you used. Looking back now, 6-7 months later, with a couple months to go, do you think that Senate has achieved that?
I think we were not the activist body we could have been the first semester. I think everyone was still kind of we were barely hitting the ground running in the fall, and we were all coming into our new positions. And I think organization was tough in the first semester. I think, though, this mold issue has kind of compelled us to become a speaking box for our students, because I think our students feel more comfortable to come talk to us now. And I think the fact that we have actually seen some results as a result of what we're doing and what students are doing, I think that can embolden students to start coming to us with real concerns. What, like the laundry thing? Because I think that will take up some time. But I am really glad about the direction that we're going in.
And so the freedom of expression philosophy, that was part of the meeting. If for those of you who are playing along at home, that was part of the meeting. It was about 5 minutes of the meeting.
Yep, seems like that was like 6 months ago.
Yeah, it really does at this point.
Even Monday seems like it was about six
yep,
months ago.
I know.
It's only Friday.
It really is like crazy.
Right, time
this
moves
this
linearly.
Week.
Moving on.
Yeah, right. So there was very limited discussion. Really, people, said that they were on board with it, and including Nick Arbaugh, who was one of the really outspoken critics of the philosophy, because that particular phrase about the college's existing policies was removed. He said, quote, "It's okay now."
I think people applauded at that.
Yeah.
Funny.
So do you anticipate any issues, because it's getting taken back up next week?
Mm-hmm.
It was tabled this week in accordance with the bylaws. So do you anticipate any issues getting that passed?
No. I really don't, especially given that Nick, who was at one point kind of the opponent of it, is now for it. I think that's important. And I think that we had a little bit of discussion about it on Monday is good. But I think obviously this coming Monday's meeting will be kind of a genre or a a resource for our students to actually have a discussion. But I don't think it's going to have any problems passing, no.
And one other student senate-related item, we've had some discussion on this podcast, and I think we've run an article that's discussed this a little bit, but there was a proposal based on a lot of work that Vice President Amy Bosman did in the fall regarding sort of the election procedures. And just to walk through what's been proposed, for those who, again, may not be religious listeners, but are listening to this particular issue, the proposal essentially was that the president and vice president will continue to be elected by the full student body. The other more technocratic positions, such as secretary, treasurer, club's liaison, and parliamentarian, will be elected by senators only. There will now be four senators for each class, as well as several at-large senators, and then also some affinity groups, which will represent clubs. You know, each club will be part of an affinity group that mm-hmm. has a voting representative, which I think is aimed to address an ongoing grievance from clubs that they're not adequately represented mm-hmm. in Senate. And so I know that the Senate Policy Committee is working on getting that into, you know, legislative language. But can you just talk in broad strokes about, you know, what the intention of this election reform is, and whether, you know, it will be implemented in time this spring for those elections to happen, and just sort of how you see that playing out over the coming month or two?
Well, I think it's important to recognize that the clubs were a big kind of the center factor of this. I think the fact that we have heard, as you said, been kind of clubs wanting the right to vote, wanting the right to really assert themselves on a constitutional basis in Senate. And I think we are addressing those concerns with the affinity groups. I think that's important. I think we're giving clubs a more clear and structured avenue through which to cast their vote in a way. And I think that's important. And that was a big pushing off point for us. I'm incredibly happy with the work that Amy and Pat have done in their respective committees, and it's a big change, but I think Senate has been, I don't want to say gridlocked for a long time, for years. I think the way we do things can be more efficient. I think we can get more done, and I think not necessarily cutting down is a good way to do that.
All right. Well, I think we'll leave it there. President Luke Fregon, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Now, before we wrap up today, I believe we have Ben Ponce with our Bullet Report.
It's been an exciting week in Gettysburg College Athletics. On February the 24th, the men's lacrosse team in their first game of the season defeated number one Salisbury 11-10, and I bet they won't be number one for very much longer. The women's basketball team defeated Haverford 44-35 before earning a bid to the NCAA tournament, which starts Friday night, which is tonight, which by the time you listen to this will be yesterday or a day before, but it's okay. They'll probably win, or maybe they won't. But either way, it's been a great season for the Centennial Conference champion women's basketball team. The women's track and field team had its performers go to the Centennial Conference championship. There were some good results. You should read about it on Gettysburgian.com. The women's lacrosse team defeated Stevenson 21-3 on the 24th. The men's track and field team also went to the Centennial Conference championships. The men's swimming team won first in the Centennial Conference championships last Saturday, and the women's swimming team finished 3rd of 8 in those same events. The men's track and field team finished 7th of 9 at the Centennial Conference Championship, while the women's track and field team finished 7 of 10. The women's softball team had 2 games postponed against Mary Washington on February the 25th. Those will be rescheduled to a later date to be determined. The women's softball team lost to Shenandoah 4-3 on the 27th, and then 3-1 in the second part of that doubleheader. Their season begins in earnest, as does baseball, lacrosse, and other assorted spring sports, which will be in future editions of the Bullet Report, which has thus endeth.
Thanks so much, Ben, as always, and thank you for joining us. That's On Target for this week. We'd like to thank Julie Ramsey, Dan Constalid, and Luke Fregon for being our featured guests today.
We'd also like to thank the staff of the Gettysburgian and the executive board of WZBT for their ongoing support of this project. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, TuneIn, Google Play, Podbean, PodSave. I don't even know where else you can get it, but just find it somewhere and download it.
I think you're just making these up now.
I am. PodSave Gettysburg College.
PodSave the Queen. On Target
PodSave the Queen, indeed. This is off the rails, but we're keeping it in.
On Target is a joint production of the Geddes Burgeon and WZBT. Our theme music was composed by Diego Rocha of the Class of 2019, who is a music major focusing on composition from the Sunderman Conservatory of Music.